Hello and welcome to the Practice Shield Podcast, episode 33. This week, we analyze the new rule changes to be introduced in the 2022 NRL season. Then we discuss Reynolds being appointed the captain of the Brisbane Broncos, the Swans announcing their captain or captains, you'll have to find out, and the evolving Ben Simmons debacle in the NBA. Once again, shout out to Sencho for providing that killer intro and introducing my good mate Blaze McKay. As always, Blaze, a big week of sport, but how are you first of all?
I'm very good, mate, and as you say, a big week of sport. We're kind of getting towards the end of the summer sports. Obviously, the Oz Open just finished up, and obviously there's a few more games of cricket with the Women's Ashes going on and a few Aussie T20s to be played. But we're getting closer to the footy season, which is a season that you and I both love, with obviously the AFL, NRL and rugby union stuff coming up, and we'll be talking all those sports today.
I mean, I'm just ready for cricket season to end. Not like, I'm sure we both want our club season to continue, and both teams are going along quite nicely at the moment, building nicely for the finals. But I am ready for some rugby league and some AFL as well, you know. So if you'd like to follow us on Instagram and Twitter, our handle is at @T_practicedrill. Especially on Twitter at the moment, we're keeping you up to date on all things NRL, AFL, cricket, rugby union, and NBA basketball. There we go. I remembered all five of them. But Blaze, I do want to discuss before we got into it the past week of sport. Now, you spoke about the Oz Open finishing. We did meet up the other day, and I was raving to you about that men's final. One of the greatest sporting matches I've ever seen. And I'm not a big tennis guy. We don't talk tennis on here, but I did want to address it before we got into the thick of, you know, the 33rd episode of the Practice Drill Podcast. But Rafa, I don't know how he won that game. That was insane.
Yeah, pretty crazy. You don't see many games like that. Two sets of love down and then coming back for, I think it was, you know, 5.5 hours their game went for in the end. And, you know, I love the Oz Open. You know, it's 2 weeks where everyone focuses on tennis and then everyone kind of forgets about it again. But, you know, one thing that I guess every year that I see is these tennis players, they're all pretty strange. And obviously, they all come with a pretty strange upbringing. I think you've got to have a lot of hours on the court, probably on your own, just hitting the ball back over the net. And, you know, a great book I once read was Andre Agassi's autobiography. It's called Open, and it really goes into that, you know, just the hours you have to spend on your own. And really, the mental game is huge in the tennis space. So it's pretty cool to see someone like Rafa. You know, he was really struggling there. Obviously, you know, he's struggling with a bit of injury and struggled with the heat. And, you know, a bit of old age as well, but he had the mental fortitude to really fight back. And then on the other hand, you saw Medvedev started really flying. But then as, you know, Rafa started creeping back up, we saw some cracks in his game. And ultimately, I think, you know, Rafa was the stronger mentally, and that helped him get over the line.
Oh, definitely. And for Rafa to have that whole audience behind you, obviously, whenever you're at your lowest in that game, you feel like you still got a chance because the crowd's cheering for you. I feel like if he was well and truly out of the game, the crowd probably quiets down. It's a little bit mellow there on Rod Laver Arena. But also, shout out to Aussie Ash winning the Oz Open for the women's circuit. That was insane as well. But also another to change sports to cricket. Under-19s have been knocked out. Disappointing?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, we played India in the semi-final, and India are always a real powerhouse at the under-19 level. I think they just play a lot more cricket, and to be fair, they play a lot together. The under-19s for India play a lot of games compared to the Aussies, where they really just come together for that World Cup. But yeah, India were well and truly the better side there, and you know, they're looking like a powerhouse for years to come.
And also, finally, before we get into that first topic, the GOAT, Tom Brady, retiring. It was a very interesting, you know, couple of days there in the NFL where it seemed he had retired. He hadn't announced anything. He came out saying he's still deciding. And then the whole world's gone, oh, maybe he will run it back for another year. And then just when the narrative started to be like that, he's come out and gone, no, I'm retiring. So it was a very strange couple of days there.
Yeah, obviously, you know, we're not really huge NFL fans, but I think any sport fan, you know, respects what Tom Brady's done. And, you know, his ability in the NFL, which such as, you know, athletic sport and dominate by so many athletic beasts, someone like him who's not as genetically gifted to come in and dominate like he has, pretty incredible. And, you know, his ability to keep turning up year on year and getting better and, you know, really honing his craft, and he's done it at multiple teams now, is pretty incredible.
Oh, it's insane. But Blaze, let's get into our episode now. As I said in the intro, we're starting off talking about the NRL rule changes. So overnight, they've confirmed numerous rule changes for the upcoming season, with the headline rule change being abolishing the free interchange. So basically what that means is the free interchanges will only be allowed for foul play, and that's excluding penalties. And what the free interchange was there for was for head-high contact, HIA assessments. And what we saw a lot last year was teams exploiting that, where you'd watch the replay and you go, like, why is he, you know, why is he lying down and going off for that injury assessment? And I think some of the better teams did it, your Penrith, your Melbourne. Melbourne especially, because they had that 1-2 punch with Grant and the Cheese, they were able to, when the Cheese started, you know, he could fake that HIA, you get a free interchange, and they can save that interchange for, you know, the final, you know, 10 minutes of the game or whenever they want to use it. But the NRL has cracked down on that. So basically, it can't be given randomly for an HIA. It can't be given for just a, you know, a head high penalty. It will be for foul play, which means sin binning or a send off. But the NRL has tried hard to take out head-high contact from the game, but in my opinion, this rule kind of seems to be taking it in the opposite direction, where it seems they're going to kind of let some things play. So I'll ask you, do you think that's actually where it's going to go, or do you think we're going to see what we saw in Magic Round, where it's a flick on the ear and you're done?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to find that middle ground there, because definitely, you know, I guess it hurts teams when they have a legitimate HIA, they're then losing an interchange when they probably wouldn't have wanted to lose one. But then again, you know, as you say, some teams definitely last year used it to their advantage, which I guess they're always going to do, and you can't really blame them for that. So I guess the NRL probably did have to make a change here. Maybe, you know, it is a bit extreme. I don't know how you could find that middle ground, you know, whether it's an assessment made by an external doctor or the bunker, which judges if it's a free interchange or not, or, you know, maybe you wait to see if the HIA's, you know, comes back positive or negative, and then they make the decision. Obviously, there's some issues there around the timing. You know, sometimes these HIA tests can take 10 or 15 minutes, so if you're waiting that long to see if it was a free interchange, it could mess up some of your other, I guess, planning that goes around definitely. The interchanges. But I think it's going to be something that, you know, is a constant evolution in the NRL, same as the AFL and the rugby union, just as, you know, there is more focus on protecting the head and, you know, I guess, as you say, removing head-high contact.
Yeah, I mean, the NRL definitely went into this crazy kind of anything above that, the shoulders is just instantly send off. And then we saw later in the season, they kind of backed up off that, and it was really strange. So for the NRL to come out, make this statement, in my opinion, knowing what I just saw in the previous season, I'm actually concerned for what this is going to do to the game, what it's going to do for the viewing, if people kind of go, well, like, there's no malice intent in what just happened. Like, we saw the Roosters win a game last year of one of their players slipping into a low hand of a Broncos player, and that won them the game. They got a penalty goal. So that's what I'm concerned about, seeing that kind of stuff creep into the game, because that shouldn't be how you win a game of any sport. You know, you could be in the AFL given a high tackle inside 50. Like, it's, you don't want to see that kind of stuff. So we'll move on to the next kind of rule change. And the other one that stands out is awarding penalties instead of six agains for the how would you phrase it? For the teams inside the defensive 40. So if you are coming out of your own goal line and the other team is deliberately giving away, you know, being offside, ruck infringements, it will be awarded as a penalty instead of a six again. I really like this because some of those quicker teams, Manly, Melbourne, Penrith, Roosters, those teams that are really good at all facets of the game, we're really exploiting that where we can go all out in attack. And then when it comes to defense, we can give some penalties away, allow our, you know, tired forwards to get back on side, and we can get a rest here. And if we have to defend for 10 tackles instead of, you know, six, so be it. Like, it's fine. So what do you think about that rule change?
Yeah, it's really positive. You know, obviously those good teams were trusting their defense, and, you know, they get, I guess for them, the most dangerous period to defend is when your line's a bit, you know, messed up from your kick chase and whatnot. So, as you say, giving away a penalty early and then just getting your defensive line set up and backing yourself to, you know, defend a few extra tackles, I think it's a really good move. And again, I think, you know, it's a really positive sign for the NRL in that they're always looking for ways to, I guess, adjust the game. And this is, you know, the six again rule for me is one that I've really enjoyed. Obviously, yeah, you know, I'm not the biggest NRL fan, but this is something that I've found helps speed the game up and something that I really enjoy. But as you say, there were a few flaws to it. So it's really good to see, I guess, the NRL constantly looking back on things that they've done, and they're not afraid to say, hey, this worked in this way, but it didn't quite work in this situation here. So we can make this little adjustment. And I think it's going to be a really, you know, positive change for this season.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely what they've done in both this rule and the previous rule that we spoke about. But I think in the previous one, it's not as straightforward of a change. Whereas with the six agains, you just go back to the way it was within a particular area because you can just see how that was being advantageous for the defensive team. So I really like that, and I think it's also going to... We saw a lot of points scored last year because of the way that teams were just able to roll through, get six again after six again, because teams were allowing them to do that. So it'll be interesting to see if this kind of brings some more fatigue into the game and we see some tighter contests than what we did last year. But some other rule changes that we'll just announce here. Won't go into detail about it, but that includes teams listing 22 players on the team sheet clearly outlining the 18th man in case of multiple HIAs, which was a rule they implemented halfway through last season, and trainers only being allowed to stop the play of game for head injuries, not other injuries like cramping or an actual, you know, broken something, which we did see a couple times last year. I think one of the Panthers trainers did it in a big moment. It might have been in that para final. But that is the NRL rule changes segment done. And we'll move on to the Broncos naming Adam Reynolds as their captain. So after 10 seasons with South and breaking the club's all-time points record, he was obviously let go. They didn't want to offer him more than a year contract. He's now signed a three-year, you know, $2.5 million contract with the Broncos, and he's the new man on the block. But given the nod to lead the Broncos, he'll become the 13th captain. That includes the NRLW captain as well. But there'll definitely be a lot of pressure on Reynolds leading the club out of what is definitely the two worst years in the club's history. What do you think selecting a new recruit as captain? Do you think that's a smart choice, an interesting choice? Like, what do you make of that?
I think it obviously comes with its risks, but, you know, the Broncos have had quite a bit of change this year. They've got a few new guys, and I think a guy like Reynolds, you know, he's got the respect across the competition. Guys know what he can bring, and he seems to me at the moment as someone who's pretty confident in where he's at and his own ability. You know, we saw a press conference when the announcement was made and someone was asking him about whether it'd be weird, you know, running out for the Broncos against the Rabbitohs. I think they've got the Rabbitohs round one. And he answered really, you know, quickly that, you know, it's not going to be weird at all. And he feels like he's a Bronco now. And, you know, those sort of responses, although, you know, obviously they're just, you know, media, pretty straight bad answers. It does, I guess, reflect his confidence. And I think that's going to, I guess, spread to the rest of the team. And I think particularly at the Broncos, we know they've got a big, you know, old boy group there that has their say, and, you know, when things aren't going as well, they can be pretty negative. And I think a guy like Reynolds, you know, to me, he seems like a guy that doesn't really let that affect him. You know, he's a pretty casual guy, and you know, I think he can get the best out of those guys up there.
And what also stood out to me about that comment is the fact that we've seen with the Broncos over the last couple of years, their players, even Kevvy Walters, maybe not saying the right thing in press conferences and kind of almost digging a bit of a hole for the team and allowing journos and the media to kind of spin a question for a full week as, are these guys really up to the standard? And I feel like with that kind of response, you get a determined vibe from it that he's like, he's played for what this is, coming into his 11th year in the league. So he has been around the block. He's a championship player. He'll just bring that experience that I don't think anyone else in that squad has had. So I'm on board with him being captain. And like you said, with a lot of new faces around, it's probably the best scenario to make that risk of making a new recruit your captain. But Reynolds seems to want to even play longer than his three-year contract. He seems very settled at in Brisbane, as what he was stating in his recent press conference after he was announced as the new captain, and said he wants to prove the haters wrong, you know, saying, you know, they think he's going to be injury prone, and all the kind of risks that South weren't willing to take is what's been voiced to him maybe on social media. But it's going to be such a big season for Brisbane. Lots of change, as we've stated. And as you said before, they have South round one. So he'll be keen to maybe get some revenge on the management side. I'm sure he's still very close with a lot of the players that are there. But who do you think actually wins that first round? Because there's a lot of change with both clubs.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think obviously South will go in a favourite, but as you say, in some key positions, they've lost some players, and obviously Latrell Mitchell will still be out with suspension. So Brisbane will probably be circling that game and thinking, you know, if you want to get South at any time, it's probably round one. And,
yeah.
You know, it's funny, I heard on another podcast, I think it was the YKGR podcast, Isaac John was saying, often in your first five rounds, if you can just kick to the corners and complete your sets, you can win kind of three out of five of your first games, just because, you know, all the teams are still getting used to a few combinations. And someone like Reynolds, who's a pretty smart operator, I think is going to be really, you know, good for the Broncos in that regard. And I think that'll be their focus in round one. And if they can do that well, you know, they'll put themselves in a really good opportunity to win the game.
Definitely, definitely. So I've got Brisbane winning that game, even though I probably agree. I think South will come in favourites. But there's just been some interesting players that South have let go. And Brisbane have picked up some really nice players. You know, even Kirk Capewell, you know, great player. And then, you know, the evolution of some of their younger players, Tessie Niu, Selwyn Cobbo. So that's going to be exciting there. But we'll move on to topic number three. And the Swans name their captains. That's right, not one captain, but multiple. And it's been a theme at the Swans for a few years. We're obviously big Swans fans here. But Josh Kennedy steps down after 5 years in that leadership captaincy role. And now it's left for Luke Parker, great choice. Dane Rampey, great choice. And Callum Mills, the youngster chucked in there. What do you think about Mills getting the nod?
Yeah, I really like it. I think, you know, you can see, although he's younger, he does have an influence over the group. I think, you know, John Longmire mentioned that he'd been in kind of leadership group since about 2018. I think he was only 21 when he got promoted into that group. So they've obviously had an eye on him as a bit of a leader, you know, for a while. And I think it's a real positive thing when a team, you know, can start to look to the future, because, you know, transition is obviously a thing, and the Swans are going to have to, you know, go through that with, I guess, Luke Parker and Josh Kennedy getting towards the end of their careers. So having a guy like Mills, you know, maybe he won't have to take a huge role in that captaincy group. Obviously, Luke Parker and Dane Rampey are pretty experienced leaders. So getting him in there, getting him experienced, and then, you know, hopefully he can build in the years to come.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a good move for Josh Kennedy. I think he obviously cares a lot about the Swans and their success. And it's probably him trying to, as you said, look towards the future, thinking, you know, I'm probably only got, you know, three or four quality years left until might have to hang up the boots, or you start taking a bit of a back roll. So he's probably thinking, you know, Mills going to be here for a while, and has been, you know, a really good player for the Swans. A bit of injury in the last couple of years has probably held him back from reaching, you know, his peak and his potential. So hopefully, tied in with leadership, health, he can have a big year. But it's reported from John Longmire that Josh Kennedy actually approached him to give Callum Mills that captaincy role. What does that tell you about Josh Kennedy as a bloke and as a blood?
Yeah, I think, as you say, it shows that he's really thinking about the club, you know.
Yeah.
I guess, and that's kind of the role as a leader. I guess you've got to, I guess, have a more holistic approach to, you know, you're not just thinking about the result on game day, but, you know, you're keeping an eye on different guys throughout the team. And I think the Swans culture has always been that sort of, you know, internal focus and really pushing the team up first before yourself. So I think, you know, that probably shows the type of character Josh Kennedy is. And it probably is a credit to Callum Mills as well, because obviously, you know, he's been impressing those guys on the training paddock with his actions. And I think the Swans, obviously they had a great year last year, but they're going to be looking to, I guess, push forward again. And Callum Mills is probably the leader of that new young brigade that really came through and impressed last year.
Definitely. So you said the Swans had a good season last year. They finished fifth, knocked down the first week of the finals, which was heartbreaking. Can still remember the game. But what makes a good season for the Swans this year? They've shown the potential to beat big teams. They beat Richmond at the MCG when Richmond were healthy, which was a great win. There were plenty of others throughout the season. So again, what makes a good year for the Swans?
Yeah, I think, you know, probably every team's looking to improve from their result previously. And, you know, for the Swans, I guess that looks, maybe they're looking to push into the top four. But I think even if they finish in those fifth or sixth spots, they'll definitely be looking to, I guess, make it past the first week of the finals and have a bit of a finals run. Like we said, they've got a young group there. You know, Mills and Heaney are coming through with a bit more experience now, but guys like, you know, Goulden and those types will be, you know, I guess, leaning on that experience they got last year in those few big games. And yeah, for them, I think it's about making a bit of a push in finals this year, whereas last year was maybe just more about making the finals.
So you think those sort of younger players are set for a big year for the Swans?
Yeah, I think they're going to have another big year. Obviously, you know, I'd be looking at Callum Mills as the one that would maybe really, you know, take another step. And Isaac Heaney, I think, is going to have a really big year again. Obviously, he's been a bit, you know, in and out with injury. And you know, when he's on, he's incredible, but he's a little bit inconsistent at the moment. So if he can continue his progression maybe into more of, you know, a Luke Parker role where they're, you know, getting 20-25 disposals and kicking a few goals, I see that, you know, that type of role for Isaac Heaney and Callum Mills this year. And then obviously their younger guys, Braden Campbell and, you know, Errol Goulden, will be looking to build again. But yeah, for me it's Mills and Heaney that will lead the charge.
Well, can't wait for the Swans season to start, and just for the AFL, which is obviously starting in mid-March. Now, we'll move on to our final topic. And we haven't spoken about Ben Simmons for a while, man. It died down for a bit once the NBA started. A couple of things, like he came back and he was training with the phone in the pocket and not wanting to do what Doc Rivers asked him. But it's now come out that he's disappointed with his all-star teammate, Joel Embiid. Now, Simmons this season, it was reported well long ago that he was going to be fined for every game he missed. And that game cost is around $360,000. That's just insane. And remember, like in the NBA, they're playing every second, every third day. So far this season, Ben Simmons has lost a whopping $19 million. $19 million. He's just been like, that's cool. $19 million, I'll let it slide. And could potentially lose another $12 million if he doesn't play another game this season. Isn't that just a crazy amount?
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. I think we've spoken about it before, but those American markets are on a different level, and you really see it, you know, when you see these numbers being thrown around, which are pretty crazy, and numbers for the Australian sport market, which you would never see. So
yeah,
it's pretty wild, and I think it also probably highlights that Ben Simmons really does feel quite slighted in some way. You know, I guess for him it's just not about the money. I guess it's easy to say that because he has earned so much money that it might just be a drop in the bucket. But, you know, I guess the ESPN reporter Ramona Shelburne spoke to a source, and you know, obviously out of the Ben Simmons camp, they're saying it's not about the money. And, you know, the source said, if you believe in what you're doing and this is not the right situation for you and you're trying to get to a better place, the money doesn't matter. So I guess that sums it up from their perspective. But when you do put it out there and see $19 million and the potential to lose another $12 million, it is pretty crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. Insane numbers. But the main thing that's kind of evolved in this situation is out of the Simmons camp, this rumor that he is expressing, you know, some disappointment, as I said at the top, towards teammate Joel Embiid. Now, Embiid's having a great season and, you know, definitely going to, he's an all-star. He is definitely, you know, in that MVP candidate race. But, you know, he is expressing skepticism around the 76ers' willingness to trade him, tied in with also that Joel Embiid comments that he made after the loss to Atlanta in last year's playoffs, where he seemed to continually blame Simmons for his poor finals run. Whereas when Kawhi Leonard hit that famous shot in the corner that, you know, bounced three or four times on the rim before, you know, dropping in to send them home in game seven, Ben Simmons wasn't there blaming Embiid for his poor series. But Embiid did the opposite. And, you know, not to bash on Embiid, but from being a guy who watches the NBA, I definitely feel like that is Embiid's character. He's a very I'm right, you're wrong kind of person. Very polarizing figure in the NBA. Some people either love him or you hate him. And that includes fans and players, you know. But So that's disappointing, and you can understand when, from what you said about the source, wanting to be in a better place, you don't want to just go back, you know, and try to cover over those cracks because they will eventually, you know, surface. But I did say it before, and I'll get into it now. Simmons expressed skepticism around the 76ers' willingness to trade him, suggesting they are waiting for James Harden to become a free agent in the summer. Won't try to bore people too much with the backroom stuff with the Sixers, but Daryl Morey, who's the general manager, was the general manager in Houston for years, and he got James Harden to Houston. And then he kind of left wanting, you know, a new challenge, went to Philadelphia, and now James Harden's off contract at the end of this year. So everyone's kind of thinking, oh, he's going to go to Philadelphia because he has that connection, which is interesting on multiple levels. But what do you think? A Harden for Simmons trade, is that on the same level? Harden, a former MVP, Simmons, a 2-3-time All-Star. What do you think?
Yeah, I guess it's tough to know. The thing that's probably holding Simmons back, as we've said, is just that he's not going to have played for a season. Obviously, he's a huge talent, but a team's going to be a bit skeptical, I guess, to take him. You know, that storyline is pretty interesting because it has seemed like this season there are constantly trade rumors coming up, and then they're falling away. I don't know if that's because maybe, as you say, the Sixers are, you know, potentially trying to hold on to him to the summer, which I guess is a little bit dodgy on their part. Yeah. But as we say, it's hard to know with this situation because there are so many different perspectives, and you know, the club and Simmons obviously have very different perspectives, and it's probably the same with Simmons and Embiid. I think if they got in a room together and maybe they could try to hash it out, but it seems like at the moment, that's not going to happen. And this situation, again, is unfolding in the media, which is probably something, maybe the Simmons camp are pushing that a bit more lately, but definitely the Sixers would be trying to keep it behind closed doors. But again, I think that's something that's really interesting about the American sporting market. For me, you know, obviously not a huge basketball fan, but I do find all this, you know, sport organization stuff really interesting because it's just something that you would never see in Australia. And you know, the, I guess, logistics that go behind trades and all the different, you know, people that have different, I guess, agendas in there that are pushing, you know, for different things. So it's one of those situations that, again, we talk about it, maybe this is the fourth or fifth time. It yeah. doesn't really seem like it's getting to an end, but yeah, there are some very interesting storylines that are coming yeah. out.
Well, the reason we've spoken about it four or five times is because every time we talk about it, there's been something new. There's been optimism that he's going to return. Then it's, there's no way he's going to return. And then it's, he doesn't like this guy. The Sixers don't like Simmons, or they don't like his manager. Like, it's just constantly evolving and changing shape. But to your point about that kind of interesting business part of American sport, it is just a business. Whereas here, you know, you see a lot of AFL, NRL players that will play for one team, and that is so rare in the NBA to find that, because they're always looking at what's the next best thing. And especially in basketball, you've only got five players on the court, so you do need to continue to evolve that, and, you know, find a way to stay successful. But that is us done for this week. Another great episode. We got through so much, man. What are you looking forward to in the next week of sport?
As we say, we're transitioning into the winter season, and you know, we spoke about a few weeks, Six Nations kicks off this weekend, so I'm really looking forward to getting some games in there. I think England, Scotland in particular will be a real highlight for me.
Yeah, can't wait for that. We did speak about that not long ago. But if you'd like to stay up to date on the Rugby Union or NRL, AFL, Cricket and the NBA, go and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at @T_PracticeDrill. Until then, enjoy your sport, and we'll talk to you next week.
See ya.